Media shouldn't be one note. Support Rabble.ca and a diversity of voices in Canadian media. Visit rabble.ca/donate to contribute.
This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's radio, free radio.
Hi, and welcome to Gooder Goods, a podcast about conscious consumption. I'm Kelly Okamura, and I'd like to share with you my long journey from front row fashionista to shopping in my closet as a trendsetter. We're all consumers who wear clothes. And as a professional in the purchasing system, my spending spree has taught me a lot about why clothes matter and why all of us need to think twice before we mindlessly make our next purchase. And hopefully before we wreck our planet for the sake of a bargain that we thought was too good of an opportunity to miss out on.
I love rivers. I love their power to move and cut canyons or coulees where I come from. I have so many happy memories of walking in rivers and being delighted to see the life it supports. I'm also a fashionista who arrives late, taking more time to dress for the occasion. I've been to the capitals of fashion, but never in the factories overseas. I started my career in fashion in a Canadian domestic dress factory, and I visited many factories here. So this might be why the film River Blue had such an impact on me. But I don't think so. As a decent person who buys clothes and connects with water throughout my daily life, I went on a journey through film that I won't forget. As a follow-up to my podcast, Blue Jean Blues, I reached out to the filmmakers to find out the Toronto screening date, and by fluke, they were headed to Toronto for TIFF, and they agreed to an interview, so I managed to screen a preview in preparation for our talk. The film trailers did not prepare me for the impact on my fashionista soul, so I could not keep media neutral, since I wear clothes and depend on water. Here's my conversation with executive producer and co-director Roger Williams and co-producer Lisa Mazzotta. And if I sound like the choir, I hope you too will see this important film and add your voice to change the way we consume.
So congratulations on making a difficult and important documentary. I understand that the world premiere happened in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, we'll get that film. Actually, our premiere happened, it was a work in progress screening, so it was a very different state of the film. We were invited to have this work in progress screening as part of the Women in Water section at the DC Environmental Film Festival. So they reached out to us and we thought, the film's not quite ready yet, but maybe a work in progress could be a good thing. And it turned out to be a great event just to have the feedback that we did and the audience that we had. It was sort of standing room only, which was great. But yeah, it created a wonderful dialogue with the people there.
The Canadian launch or the world launch will happen in October...
1st.
1st in Vancouver.
In Vancouver, and then there's an additional screening October 4th in Vancouver as well.
I think that in screening the film, both as a former, as a journalist, as well as a fashion professional, I'm also a consumer. And viewing the film, I thought it might be interesting to have a conversation as opposed to a neutral journalistic interview. So I hope you're okay with that.
Absolutely. And it actually does need to be a conversation. We're talking about water, we're talking about people, we're talking about fashion, and conversations need to start somewhere, and we need to start with this one.
Absolutely. I think that the toxins from China that are coming from textiles are landing in our Canadian Arctic in a polar bear.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really strong message.
Well, I think so too, and that's a point we wanted to get across, that what happens over in some other part of the world, the rivers, the oceans, we're all connected. And so in that, of course, whatever they dump into whatever river is going to end up on our shore. It's going to end up on everybody's shores. So it's a very connected world, and we have to be conscious of that.
Yeah, it's something that... It's easy to forget that what we do here is affecting people everywhere. it's easy to forget that our actions right now have such a large ripple effect. So when we go, oh, that's a great deal, I want to buy that t-shirt for $5 or those jeans for $15, we're thinking of our own, you know, our savings and our work, and that's important too. But for something to be that cheap, what's going on for it to be produced that way? And what's happening once we sort of looked at and what we found in the film is that things, you know, when we ask for something for $5, that means certain chemicals are used or proper filtration processes aren't used or whatever other means. It means someone on the other side, whoever's making that, is having a negative effect to them. And it's affecting their life in a pretty bad way. So if these toxins are going into the water, that's their drinking water, that's their bathing water, that's their cooking water. And the health effects from that are also devastating.
Well, you know, I've spent my entire working life in fashion, and I've never gone to the factories. So talk about the power of film. I mean, you gave me the opportunity to be there with you. There were points probably fairly close to the beginning that it was so visceral that it really took me down.
You know, and we didn't want to create a film that took you down. What we wanted to do is create a film of hope. But to get to hope, you know, sometimes have to go through the bad stuff. And so we had to, you know, start the film with some of the bad stuff that we've seen in Bangladesh and Indonesia and China and India. And by doing that, then we can move forward, you know, into hopefully some solutions and look into more of what's happening in a positive light. But yeah, there's some, having been there, there's some very unbelievable scenes that we encountered. And yeah, it's pretty awful what a lot of people have to live with. But again, there's ways that we can actually help improve. And we're not trying to take jobs away from somebody in Bangladesh or something like that. But, you know, for instance, in Bangladesh, we met with an environmental lawyer, and she says, you know, our environmental laws are actually really stringent, but there's no will to follow them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And part of that problem is a lot of the factory owners are actually involved in government. So if they don't have any need or will to follow the environmental laws, then they're not going to.
And so I think that this is an important film based on that, because whether we as individuals see and believe that the change has to happen, we need that mass of consumers in order to make the change. So going after policy is one thing, but to have the accountability to the policy requires the will of the people.
Absolutely, 100%. Mm-hmm. So right now what I'm seeing is there are, you know, small groups, what I would call early adopters. And you can see that in technology and all kinds of different things. But right now, we're starting to now see that in the fashion and clothing industry. It's very, in its infantile stages, in my opinion. And when you look back at the organic food movement or something like that, that started 20 years ago, what we're doing is something very similar in the fashion world, in my opinion. We're starting very small, but once the consumer, that conscious consumer, catches on, it will change industry because they will demand that change happens, just like they did with the organic food movement, so that now organic food is very similar in cost to what non-organic food is. I see that happening in fashion too.
Sure. Like I think I was mentioning to you yesterday that I've been here at the Center for Social Innovation for almost a decade. I came here because I started saying to industry to stop making crap. Mm-hmm. And that was incredibly naive of me. You know, your film, it really tore a strip off my fashionista soul.
Good.
It hurt. And for listeners out there, you gotta watch it to the end. I think I watched it in segments. I was moving from my partner's place back to my place. And so I had various stop points. And I left him and I was crushed. I drove home in the rain.
And then it got better.
I texted him this morning because it was a late night screener. Say that I'm glad I made it and pushed through. It absolutely had that hope at the end.
Yeah, it was something that was really very important for us because it's hard to see all of that is hard. And it's hard then to look at that and know that you're a part of it and what to do with that then. And so offering something of hope is really
I think you did a great job. Good. I'm so glad I made it to the end.
You know, and again, it's that was something that I, right from the very start of the film, you know, I talked to, you know, Lisa and Mark Angelo and David McElroy, our co-director, and I just said, I can't do another documentary where it's just negative, 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 and at the end of it, you know, it's just too negative. We got to have something of hope. We have to go out and find out what's going on in the world and where the positives are. And in doing that, we came across some really cool people. And, you know, Luigi Caccia from Metal Denim, he's one of my highlights. I mean, it's a small point in the story, but it's a big point in the story.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, Lucas Eichmann, a young fashion designer and manufacturer in Los Angeles. Again, doing stuff in a micro kind of cosm, but that's going to catch on because people are looking at people like Lucas and Luigi and going, maybe there is some value in doing it in that way. And they're doing it very cost effectively. So his denim that he has is the same price as somebody that's in Bangladesh or India.
Wow.
And that to me was shocking.
Absolutely.
And pretty phenomenal that a guy that's in a very environmentally strict country,
yes,
is paying good wages to his employees. Most of his employees were well over 30 years old and had been with him for a very, very long time. And here's a guy, again, who went through every bit of his own supply chain and corrected it. So if he can do it, others can do it.
It might be a backward step, but, you know, how did this come about?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a good question. I mean, what happened was I actually had worked on a project with Mark Angelo, and Mark Angelo is a world-renowned paddler. He's paddled apparently over 1,000 rivers. He's obviously a great water advocate and an educator. And so I did a small project with him. And after that, it really started getting me thinking. And I actually had wanted to do a environmental water documentary, but I wasn't sure how, and I was looking at different projects and I kind of landed on this thing that maybe we should be looking at rivers and fashion. And it was Dave McElroy, my co-director. I'd gone to him early and I said, I'm trying to do this documentary and I've got a good theme, but I haven't quite got the story yet. And he started doing some research and he came back to me and he said, you know what, I found this satellite photo from the Pearl River in China. And
big impact at the start of the film. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's a problem. We have a serious problem. So we'd started doing more research and it really landed on, yeah, we should do something with rivers and we should do something on fashion. And fashion includes leather, it includes textiles, it includes denim. It's all of these combined. So that's why we wanted to go and see, okay, what's happening in you know, the leather side of things. What's going on in that? And we went to Kanpur, India, and we went to Dhaka in Bangladesh. And those places are absolutely horrific. What you can't get out of the film is the smell. When we stepped out of our cars to go and work in those environments, it almost knocked me over with the smell of chemicals. And that was coming off the rivers. How these people can live and work and continue is beyond belief. So we wanted to go see that. But at the same time, we wanted to travel some of the other rivers and see some of the hopefulness. We're in London, and Mark said, you know, I really want to do this small piece on the Thames River because look at this river. 100 years ago, 150 years ago, it was biologically dead. There was no oxygen for the first 3 feet above the river. That's incredible.
So I think that you were really successful in terms of getting, like I mentioned, that really visceral sense. I get that the smell wasn't there, but, you know, in my backyard, I'm really close to the Don River, and it's something that the David Suzuki Foundation had worked to clean up. Mm-hmm. So I took my young children and we've been down there and I let them go into the water and I've seen the fish.
Fantastic.
So I mean, I know that also used to be a tanning river as well,
yeah,
upstream. And so people, when they were developing the river with the apartment buildings and all the rest, they didn't have windows facing the river because it was so nasty.
Yeah.
So to understand like the change, it is one of my most favorite places in the city.
Exactly. So a river can change.
Absolutely.
We can bring it back. And even those rivers that we saw overseas, we can bring those back. They may not be perfect, but if we stop allowing all that toxic chemical water to go into those rivers, which again goes through the oceans, you know, things can change, and they can change fairly quickly. But we need to, you know, find a way to stop what's going on and find some new solutions and show that to the world so people in other parts of the world can say, you know what, yeah, I can take the chemicals out. There is different ways to process, and we can stop doing what we're doing, and we can still make the money that we're making. Because that's the point, is you can get to a situation where your textiles and clothing don't need those chemicals. You know, that's almost a marketing thing where people said, no, you have to have these chemicals. Really? Do we? Maybe we don't. And there's, you know, again, the solutions are out there.
Sure.
Yeah. And that actually is a big part of it too. Like, I know when I watch something or attend an event and I go, okay, I've learned this thing. Now what can I do? And I think as a storytellers and people who want to create, help to create change, it's important to give people options of what they can do afterward, because that's when they've just seen it and they're going, okay, now you have my attention.
Yes.
So part of this and part of the release of the film too is a campaign for eco and clean fashion. And so we're putting this whole site together. The campaign itself is called Your Choice, Your Voice.
Yes.
And it's just about, we're calling it a hub for eco fashion for now, but it's giving people options of what they can do. It's teaching them about what shareholder activism is, and you know, if you buy a dollar or, you know, one share of a company, then you can go to an annual general meeting and speak about issues that you're having with the company, and you know, writing to a CEO or writing to people at a company, it's not it won't go unheard. The little steps are the things that eventually build to something bigger. And I know that as a consumer, half the time you feel like what you do doesn't make a difference, and you're so small in this big giant world that nothing you do means anything. But when we all do these little things together, that's when we can see the change happen, and that's actually what we're hoping we can start a little movement towards.
Well, in my last podcast, I talked about Oecotex, and maybe that's part of it as well, in terms of a solution that's there, and they need that next lift. My podcast, Good or Goods, is simply about not being perfect, but making those iterative steps towards the change creates
Absolutely.
Action.
Absolutely. What small steps can we all take as a conscious consumer? You know, can I ask my manufacturer? I went into a Levi's store and I said, you know, I've heard that you're making this waterless product.
Yes.
Show it to me and tell me about it. And well, unfortunately, they couldn't find any in the store, and the guy that was repping Levi's really couldn't tell me what the process was. Patagonia is also started to make jeans now.
Yes.
I went into their store and I said, tell me about your clothing. And they said, oh, it's eco-friendly and all the rest of it. And I said, okay, how?
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't get an answer back. So education is a big part of this.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You know, they need to, you know, we need to, first of all of us need to, as conscious consumers, go and ask how our clothing is made.
Absolutely.
And that one small step will translate to that store representative, which will translate up to the managers, because they're going to, if they keep getting asked the same questions, mm-hmm. they're going to have to come up with an answer. And then once the answer is out there, then they're going to have to, you know, people like you and myself and Lisa will go and maybe we'll vet that and go, is that really correct or is that just a marketing spin?
Yeah, which happens a lot.
Sure.
And part of that too, on that note, I know the feeling of guilt and blame happens a lot for when people will learn something, they go, oh God, I feel guilty, but now I don't want to, well, but I can't change my ways or I can't change it. Those things seem so...
I can do.
Yeah, it's the little things that we can do, like going into a store and just asking. If suddenly, you know, 25 people builds to 50 people builds to, you know, more and more asking these stores and these manufacturers what's going on, they will start to listen, because then they can't close their eyes to it anymore.
You know, that was one of my hardest struggles, was working with industry and starting first with risk mitigation and then going into opportunity. Show me the proof. There was a resistance to change that, as a change maker, I certainly know I've done it all of my life, that change is really difficult even for myself. So I think I'm really optimistic that other people have been working on other parts of the solution. And I don't know if you've seen the GlobeLink study. They have a wonderful study. It gives me the metrics And right now we're at about 40% in terms of what's called the aspirational customer. So the customer is there, and it was a back and forth with my colleagues in industry that, Kelly, the consumer's not willing to pay. And they were chasing a green customer, or they were greenwashing. So there were all of these different tactics that were happening. But I think that the rise and the validity that this is the biggest consumer market and growing globally is really interesting because it is opportunity. So I can sell them through in terms of, look, you can create the product and it's not for the people who are not buying, but you have to offer choice to people in the marketplace and give them the reason why.
And I guess the idea of offering a green option or an eco option is one thing, but then what if all of the products are made in that way instead? And I think that's, you know, the dream or the end goal is that it's not just a line. It doesn't become eco-friendly anymore, or it is, but everything is made in that way. And if you can get to that point, then we're really moving for a positive future.
I was sitting in my linen yesterday that you know, I could feel the textiles on me.
Mm-hmm.
And to take the truck that I did home in the rain, it's not enough to know after seeing your film that I can just turn on my tap. I can waste that water. I might be a fashion pro, but I'm also a decent human being.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of people are, and it's just not knowing, and then suddenly you know. I've said it to Roger so many times, it's so hard for me to buy anything anymore. I'm like, I don't know if I...
And we're not trying to stop the clothing industry by any means. We all want clothing and need clothing, and that's great. But the way that it's made can change.
Yeah.
And that's, the hopefulness is that we've proven, because we've seen small steps being taken around the world, and it can be done. It can be done here in Toronto. It can be done in Bangladesh. It can be done in London. It can be done in Montreal.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, you can turn on your water and feel safe drinking that. And everyone has, you know, should be able to do that everywhere. That should be a natural human right.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that you scored a lot of points. I felt kind of that they were difficult to take in. But that hopefulness and those pieces that they exist and they're real. They are possible and we can go forward.
Mm-hmm.
So we need, instead of looking at the executive office to create that change, to think about consumers as shareholders in the process. And then we have enough mass that we can move.
Absolutely. I don't think those CEOs and presidents in those large boardrooms, I mean, they're looking out for the interest and the profitability of their large corporations. And that's something that Orsolo De Castro talked about. And I agree with that 100%. So it really comes back down to the consumer that must become a little more conscious and start asking questions. And once that happens, things are going to change, and they'll probably change quite quickly. But it's going to take a while. I mean, it's all baby steps right now.
Well, I think that I often go into to my clients and I say to them that once you know, you can't go back to not knowing.
Exactly.
And congratulations on the film, because I hear what you're saying, but on the other hand, it's within me now, and I can't not know.
You can't unsee it.
I'm turning on a back. You know, I was telling you that I've also spoke to the people from True Cost, and that was a really important film, but it hit me in a different way because it was still removed. There was still about choice, but I am not going to wake up tomorrow and be naked. I am going to put on clothes. I'm going to use water, mm-hmm. and I get the point, and I can't not know. So I'm curious about what happens after the film. And that means that we need to have solutions that are ready there.
And again, that's part of it. And we've seen that there are solutions available. Genealogy in Spain, they've figured out a different way of by using ozone to people want distressed genes. That's fine. They figured out a way to create distressed genes without sandblasting, without all the different chemicals that that are out there. So, you know, again, there's solutions, and that's what we wanted to prove by traveling through the world, is where are these solutions? What are they doing? How are they doing it? François Gerbeau, he's the godfather of denim.
Fabulous.
Funny man.
Wow.
Funny man. He's
yeah,
fantastic.
That's great.
Again, he's in his early 70s, and there he is. He's got more energy than most 30-year-olds I know. And he helped create the industry, and he saw what the devastating effects are, and he's still in it to change it because he knows he can change it, and he's a part of that process. And he is passionate about what he's doing, and he will talk to anybody and everybody. It's pretty amazing.
I don't know that I wanted to be an activist.
You know, and I've never considered myself an activist. You know, I'm more of a realist.
Well,
if this
too.
Is really happening,
sure.
Then maybe we should really change it. And that's when we started the film. One of the first things we talked about is this could be truly an agent for change.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you taking time out of the busy TIFF schedule
no
to
problem.
Talk with me.
Thank you very
thank
much,
you
Kelly.
So much,
appreciate
Kelly.
It.
Yeah.
Did you hear my voice crack? Spoiler alert. This is one film where I'm going to tell you the ending. It shows real footage in a documentary that ends in hope and the possibility to bring rivers back. But it won't happen without consumers like you lending your voice to make the change happen. And if your cop-out is you don't wear denim, River Blue starts with leather and shows the devastation of toxins in making cheap clothes. So pledge your support to see this film on their website so you too can be transformed by the power of film. Film launch is October 1st in Vancouver, plus a second screening October 4th. Buy your ticket or make it known that you want a screening in your hometown too. Be gooder and get your covered bum in a seat for change. Follow me on Twitter at GooderGoods. The links I referenced can be found on Facebook. Search GooderGoods. And the podcast is uploaded on soundcloud.com/GooderGoods. Choose to be gooder.